Welcome to another exciting episode of Pins and Vids, the monthly online audio show for classic arcade video games and pinball machines. I'm your host, Al Warner, and I welcome you to our show. Well, it's been about 2.5, maybe 3 months since the last show went out. I'm very sorry for the delay in doing this. It's been a very difficult time, not difficult, but a very busy time in my life. And I'd like to thank you for coming back again, and I hope to correct this so we won't be seeing this happen again. Hopefully we'll be doing a show every month or at least, and I'm hoping for the best for the show. For the future of the show, I'm hoping to have more interviews. This is going to be a probably not the best show we've done so far because it's not going to have the interviews like I was hoping to have in every episode. But I promise I will have some interviews for you in the next show, which I'm hoping to have in maybe 2 weeks. That's the intended goal, maybe 2 to 3 weeks. So we'll get back on track, and we'll see how we can do. Well, it's been a busy couple of months for me. I recently purchased a new classic video game, a Joust machine, and I've also added a couple of pinball machines to my collection, a Tales of the Arabian Nights and a Star Wars Episode One. I'll be talking further on into the show about the Star Wars Episode One. Let me start by talking about this recent incident. It's relatively recent, but in the last couple of weeks, with this guy named Evil Exidy on the internet. There's a link on the Pins and Vids page, and you can read that there. This guy's name is John. He lives down in Lakeland, Florida. And the local township has stated that he is running a business by collecting arcade games. They believe that he's running a business. Sounds like a jealous neighbor to me more than anything else, but what was interesting was is that he got a letter from them, a cease and desist order, saying basically get rid of all the games. He's obviously a collector. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But what he did was, instead of calling a lawyer, he called the local TV station. What the TV station did was to do an interview with him and did some video, which you can actually download from his website, which is pretty neat. And it shows an interview with him and shows him playing his games and all this stuff. And then after that, the local government dropped their charges. That was pretty interesting. This brings up the question of where does a business start and a hobby end? One of the things I had done a long time ago was a good friend of mine who I'll be interviewing on one of the future shows. I'm not going to say who, but one of the things that we had brought up was is that, you know, if you're a hobbyist and you're a collector, then you just simply collect. You can't sell anything. My opinion has always been that there is a certain amount of selling that must go on for this hobby to continue. I can't afford the games that I'd like to have because they're so expensive. That makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of the games that I really want to buy are so expensive. But I found that by buying and selling things, I've been able to make enough profit on those things, or not really profit, but to help feed the hobby per se. And that's, to me, is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about feeding a hobby. Not trying to make a big profit or not trying to make $1 million and, you know, not trying to make run my life off it. And there are people who do that. That's what they do for a living. But I, you know, simply need to try to subsidize the hobby because what I want costs more than I can afford. Seems pretty simple if you think about it. I can't imagine anybody can't do this. I mean, you know, if you go to an auction, you buy some boards and you find, you know, that there's some things you don't need and some things you do. Well, you know, you sell the ones you don't need off. You can usually get some of the money back you paid for things, if not all of it or more, and use the future money towards some other things. A hobbyist will have spent more money than they took in, and that constitutes a hobby to me. Well, on to the next segment. Pinball. Well, I bought a new pinball machine. I bought a brand new in-the-box Williams Episode 1 pinball machine. Got a very good deal on the machine, and I actually got pick up 2 boxes, never been opened before, you know, right from the factory, and took pictures of all the whole process of taking it out of the box and putting it together and all the other things. My friend Steve Zuner helped me put the game together, and it took us about 3 hours to get the whole machine out of the box carefully and put it together. We were on my front driveway, so the concrete was an issue, so we made sure that we didn't scratch the cabinet by putting it on cardboard or using the cardboard we took it out of the box with and made sure of it. I also kept the box because that's an important thing of owning a new in-box pinball machine, is that the fact that you might want to someday put it back in the box if you sell it or move it on with that. I like the game. It's interesting. It's a lot of fun. It's different than anything else I've got, obviously. And I don't think you can own a hybrid game like this, a game that's been designed to be different, and not think, gee, this is pretty different from everything else I've got. Would I buy it again is another question I've been thinking to myself. I'm not sure. I like the Return from Mars, the other pinball machine, the other Pinball 2000 game. And I was thinking about whether I would like to go that machine or this one. And who knows? You know, you never know what your future is going to bring. I might just end up with both of them someday. You just got to take things as they come along. Well, I'm going to go on to my last section of this this rather short show. It's going to be a little different from the previous shows, and it's not going to be quite as long. And what we're going to do is I'm going to talk about how to buy a game. I'm not going to cover details about how to buy a game, but I do want to discuss it a little bit. I actually had an email question right after the last show went out on, you know, where do I get games, what do I pay for them, and what do I look for when you buy a game? Well, buying games is a very interesting little thing. It's actually almost a sideline of the hobby. It's you don't know what you're going to find, where you're going to find it, and who you're going to have to deal with. The first part of the process is to decide exactly what you want. Now, I know this can be a difficult thing. I can say honestly it took me a long time to figure out that, you know, there was things that I wanted or I didn't want, or things that I really, you know, made some bad decisions as to what it was I was going to buy. I've been at auctions and got that little impulse that said to me, boy, I really need a gun game, and end up with this huge game called Beast Busters in the back of a truck, you know, and bringing it home and saying, oh, man, I have no place to put this, and then finishing it, you know, within 45 minutes of buying it. So the best thing to really decide is exactly what you want and zero in on that particular game. Say that I used to have a list of like four or five games I really wanted. So that's not an out of the question thing. Just that when those particular things show up, you know, you have to have either some money or some time and just try to have to go and find these things. Now, looking at the machine to decide whether it's something that you want or not, you have to bring a whole bunch of knowledge in with you. And the most important thing is replacement parts. How hard is it going to be to get replacement parts? You need to know a good amount about the machine from a cosmetic standpoint. When you talk about pinball machines, you want to look at play fields and you want to look at things like that. Electronics, for the most part, are probably something you can probably fix. There are, when you get into some of the older electromechanical pinball machines, there are some questions as to what parts are available and which things are like that. But for most of your more modern solid-state type pinball machines, you're probably pretty good. Video games, the availability of parts varies from time to time, I would say. There are times when you're going to be able to find all the Tempest board sets you can imagine. I'm not saying you want to pay for them, but at least you'll be able to find them. And there's times when you can't find one for anything. So you have to really be conscious of what you're trying to buy. When you buy the machine, you should look at and make sure that things that are all in the right spot. If the control panel has been changed or hacked on a video game, or the machine shows excessive wear on the playfield, and you know that the future of that machine is going to be that you're going to replace the playfield, or you're going to have to replace parts of a video game because they were either replaced by other parts or they were converted, or, you know, you have to make the decision as to what the overall cost is going to be and be ready to accept that cost as part of the process of the machine. What you'll find is that many times the machine has got like a broken monitor. That's one of those things where you bring a machine up and you hear the game playing, and you have a good idea that it's probably in good shape. From a functional view, it probably works, but you can't see a picture. Monitors are probably the easiest thing to deal with, because you can buy brand new ones for under $200 right now, or you can just fix a monitor, which really isn't that hard to do after you learn the basics of how they work. Of course, a lot of these rules don't apply to your XY games or your vector-based games, as people like to call them, things like Tempest and Star Wars and things like that. They can be a lot more difficult to repair, and you need to know a little bit more about what's available before you buy them. When it comes to your pinball machines, like I said before, you want to look at things that that aren't as easily replaceable. A lot of times, plastics and things like that are pretty easy to get. Can be pretty easy to get. There are, as the machine gets older, they get a little harder to get parts for. But you want to look at things like the play field, and you want to look at things like back glasses on the older machines. And that's what you should make is your determination as to whether you want to buy this particular item. When you've decided that you fit, and this is the thing you want, and you know that, and you're now in front of somebody who's offering you a price, take a look at the overall price of what you want to put into it and what they're actually going for in nice shape, and then subtract out the cost of all the things you're going to put into it. Some people like to include their time, but for the most part, you're a hobbyist, so time is free. But everything else is parts, and that's what you have to start considering. If you put, you know, you have to put another, you know, for example, you get a Star Wars with an original monitor into it. Most likely, if the original monitor is in it, it's going to need a high voltage transformer for the Amplifon monitors that came with the original Star Wars machines. So you're going to need one of those, and that's going to run you a couple $100. So you need to add that into the price of a broken machine. Things like that. That's basically what I'm trying to say is you want to consider that. At this point, now you have to go into negotiations on the price. Because if the price is out of line for what it is, you know, there are two different types of people. People who don't know and the people who do. People who do or think they do, which is actually the worst scenario, they're the ones that you're going to have to deal with. And a lot of times the best thing to do is to say, you know, it's going to cost me this much to get it fixed, or this is how much it's going to cost. Now, if they know or they don't know, you're actually playing your card here as to whether they, you know, whether the negotiation is going to be right. If the price is already good enough and you know what it is, it's best to at least ask if they'll take a little less, just so they don't think that they're undercharging you. It sounds kind of ridiculous, but I mean, I've made an offer for less money, and totally didn't want to. Wasn't planning to pay it. Was planning to pay what they asked for, but I just didn't want to make them feel like, you know, they were undercharging me for it. Another thing to do is when you go to an auction. Auctions are difficult places to buy a game. It's one of those things where it might be the most easily, if you know, easy to get to and know that things are there, and you have your inspection time before the auction. Carefully examine the game and see what condition it's in. If you can look inside the coin door, do what you can to look inside the coin door and see how things are in there. I've seen games at auctions where the power supplies on the machines and things like that were actually weren't even bolted to the bottom of the machine or to the side of the machine. This will cause lots of problems. As you take it home or as you transport it, if anything is wrong, it could actually, you know, hurt the system, hurt the game in a bad way. And if you didn't know that, it would be a bad thing. Because you have no warranty once you leave there. That's the thing. Another thing is there's also the other route of buying a game from a dealer. Now, I've talked about dealers before, and I know quite a few of them, and I've sold games to them, and I've bought games from them. The dealer is an interesting person. He's actually trying to make a living doing this. In some cases, I can justify what they do as far as selling and buying things. Some dealers are, you know, by all intents of collector status, would say they're gouging the people who buy things from. I have to weigh that idea against the fact that a lot of them give warranties. Sometimes, you know, 30 to 90 to unlimited kind of a warranty kind of thing, or, you know, with some other future considerations included in that price. I don't know. I think I won't pay those kind of prices for some things, but other people will. And if they're willing to pay the money and they're going to get a warranty for it, that to me is worth something, I would think, you know, because they don't know how to fix the machine when it goes bad. As a collector, as you get better, more into this over time, you'll learn how to fix these things as well. And this will seem a lot easier to you at this point. So I would honestly say that, you know, the price you pay should be based on what you get. And that should be the real consideration. What are you getting for your money? Well, thank you for listening, and this about wraps it up for this show. We're going to be back in about 3 weeks with a new show, and in that time, have a good time collecting. Thanks.